This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Steve Michelson. The Oracle of the motoring world, Paul Ward Gover. Paul writes for Car Sales, Australian Business Traveller. Do you still do stuff for that supercar magazine, Paul?
Yes, and yeah. I'm doing stuff for the Grand Prix program and stuff for the Bathurst 12-hour. I've been very busy while you've been off having long service leave.
I know, it's fantastic, isn't it? Just think, I haven't been able to disrupt the industry.
Well, and the other thing is, the industry's got along fine without you.
It has.
It's probably enjoying the peace and quiet.
Yeah, it has.
Well, actually, Macca, you can tell he's been on holidays. Because if he hadn't been on holidays, he would have said, well, actually, Paul, sales went backwards last year for the first time, and the market is in recession, and therefore they obviously do miss me.
So he's speechless. Yeah. Look, he's speechless, Paul. You've got him tongue-tied.
You're probably right, Paul. Sales were down last year, pretty much across the board. It's a couple of reasons. Yep. Main reason, I think, is credit availability, and I'm not just talking about banks, I'm talking about finance through dealerships. There's a little bit of, people are a little bit unsure about making large investments in motor vehicles at a time when there's no wage growth, effectively. It's not about prices. It's never been more competitive out there in the market. But 2018...
It's about consumer confidence, isn't it, really?
It is. Now, 2018 was a pretty interesting year in the industry. Hits and misses, Paul?
excuse me, hits, obviously Toyota. They managed to, if you look at, and in fact, the three local manufacturers, former local manufacturers, are the best hits and misses. Toyota have come through the shutdown of their factory in Melbourne perfectly well. They're still number one. They're cruising along. Ford and Holden both, they've fallen to the bottom end of the top 10. The biggest loser, I think, last year was Holden. And I think the situation there is reflected in the fact that they've hired a former boss of Toyota Australia to take over the reins. I think that's going to take a while. I think the other thing that went backwards last year was the futurist stuff in Australia, if you like. There's still no commitment by government at any level to try and get electrification happening in Australia, which is pretty dismal when you consider that the car companies around the world are working very hard on getting electric cars on the road. Lots and lots of macros, you know, lots of little winners, little losers. But I think really, honestly, Toyota, to come through the way they did with basically no interruption to service, if you like. I spoke to the CEO of Toyota Australia yesterday after the announcement of the sales figures, Matt Callahore, who's the guy running the thing, and he actually says they're probably a few percentage points ahead of where they thought they were going to be. But he's quite happy with the situation. But he also pointed out that the market has played into their hands in the sense that they're the strongest SUV company and they're able to, you know, ride out whatever unpleasantness there is because they have such a big footprint, and it's also helped by the fact they have a huge number of SUVs and utes and you name it.
So 2019, Paul, what does the market hold there? I believe, you know, you're still going to see a result well over a million. But, you know, what do you think? Is there a brand that stands out to you that's, you know, that is on the run and that is going to get some more, you know, perhaps move up a spot in the top 10, top 5?
I don't think there'll be a lot of movement in the positioning, but I think the brand that is still accelerating pretty hard is Hyundai. They're doing a lot of good things. I think Kia will do really well as well. The two South Korean companies, well, it's one company, two brands, are doing lots and lots of good stuff. And, excuse me, they have the most upside because they're not in all of these categories, they don't have a ute. They don't have a huge range of SUVs. So unlike Toyota, which has got a footprint in every area of the market, I think there's still a lot of upside for them because they can still bring new models that are into new sectors. I think that'll be interesting. I think, you know, if you look at Ford are going pretty well in Australia at the moment. If they can stay true to their knitting, I think they'll do well. I'd like to see Holden at least reverse the slide. You know, I think they actually have some good cars. They have completely misread the message. And in fact, I was talking to a gentleman yesterday who was on holidays in New Zealand last week, and he said everywhere you go in New Zealand, there are Holden Commodores on the road, you know, and there are Astras on the road. And he said that they managed to weather the storm far better than Australia did, you know. One of the slogans they have over there, I'm paraphrasing, is different but better. You know what I mean? Instead of apologising for the fact that they pulled out and withdrew the Aussie Commodore, they basically said, well, here we go. We're a new company. We're getting on and pushing. And I think Holden had this apologist approach to the whole withdrawal, and the message they also conveyed through their own incompetence was that people were, you know, when they said they were leaving Australia, instead of saying we're leaving Australian manufacturing, I think a lot of people thought Holden was actually leaving Australia. There weren't going to be Holden cars in Australia anymore.
So, Paul, I'm reluctant to ask this question, but Steve, my co-host this morning, he wanted to ask you about driverless cars. For God's sake,
Paul, I have to confess, I pay for cars for my husband. Like a car, and I had to drive a car. I have very little interest outside when it comes to cars. So I apologise. So hence this question, although I'm told that the co-host for whom I'm sitting in today, Tass, would love to ask this if he were here.
He always asked this question.
He always asks the question.
But I was going to ask you, there's been this extraordinary situation in Chandler, Arizona, where at least 21 attacks have been levelled at the Waymo driverless vans.
Yep.
And that some analysts say they expect more of such behaviour as the nation moves into a broader discussion about the potential for driverless cars. I mean, that extraordinary. I mean, people on the street attacking cars. What do you make of that, Paul?
Well, they can't do anything about their politics, so they start shooting cars. America.
Speaking of Donald J. Trump.
Look, mate, it's America, and there is weirdness. No matter what you want to, we live in the land of the interweb. You know, you can find something stupid about America every single day. Why are they particularly in that area resistant? I'll bet you if those Waymo cars are there, there are rules and regulations that they've changed in that particular area to allow those vehicles to run there. Because, and people are probably reacting against the rules, not the cars. So,
But we're going to see, surely over time, the debate around driverless cars come to Australia in earnest. I mean, do you think there are lessons from this in Arizona that some car companies in Australia should be thinking
about? Absolutely no lesson at all. The fact of the matter is driverless cars in Australia are more than 20 years away. You can write that down and put the date on it. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet you that if you want to bet against me, that's fine. The fact of the matter is driverless cars work perfectly well in a corralled environment. Mm. So right at the moment, they work well in places like big fairgrounds. They work well at airports. And they work well in university campuses and places like that, where they can actually build a barrier around the area and corral them off.
A bit like Parliament, Paul.
Yes.
You know, mindless politicians work well within a parliament. Put them outside, they're dangerous.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly correct. But so the fact of the matter is, driverless cars do not interact well with driving cars at the moment. And the best example of that, last year, a driverless shuttle at an airport got backed into by another vehicle because the program for the driverless vehicle didn't tell it what to do if the car in front selected reverse gear. So it just sat there and got backed into. Yeah. So every time that you come up with a scenario of what do you do, there are problems with this sort of thing at all levels. Now, I've ridden in a number of driverless cars and they work perfectly well within a very, very limited range.
You must have been a bit anxious. Go on, be honest. You must have been a little bit anxious. You must have sort of...
Paul's driven with some very dangerous motoring, journalists, and believe me, you know, a driverless car in most cases is safer than...
Bit of a relief.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, look, and Macca's quite right. I mean, I've driven with race car drivers around racetracks and things. So being in a driverless car, it's not at all... The ones that they're letting journalists in at the moment are effectively like aircraft. They have a fail safe for everything. Mm. So instead of having one GPS system, they have two. Mm. You know, I asked one guy what the car I was riding in. It was a BMW. Okay, I said, what is this car worth? Now, in Australia, this particular car would sell for about $250,000. This thing was $6 million because of all the technology that was in it to stop it having a crash. Because they know... If they have one crash with a journalist on board, that'll be the end of the program.
Absolutely.
Driverless
like Joy FM, really.
Ooh. I like Joy FM. I always listen to Joy FM.
Oh, no,
it's
no,
Joy
no,
94.9. No. Now, we have a question. Yeah. There are more EVs for sale in New Zealand than in Australia. And he says, what can the new Labor government do to catch up on EVs? Well, he's making an assumption. Paul, do you think this is a tipping point this year for EVs? I think it's
the start of the tipping point, Macca. I think 2019 is the year where the car... So at the moment, if you talk about electric cars, it's basically, it's a Tesla game. There are other, you know, BMW do have one, Nissan do have one, but basically there is a large...
And Hyundai?
Yeah, you're right.
And there are others that are coming.
So there are a number... Yeah, there are a lot more coming, but this is the year when the car companies are going to lay the foundation for actually selling these cars. So I've spoken to four different car companies that don't currently have an electric car, that are going to have one in 2020. They're going to start bringing the cars here and demonstrating them. They're going to start putting pressure on governments to do something about helping with infrastructure, because you can't rely on Elon Musk forever to be having the only fast charging system in the country.
But isn't the problem with electric vehicles the price point? I mean, you know, we went out and bought it.
There's a number of problems with them. Price point is one. Mm. Yes, you are correct. Mm. They are wickedly too expensive. They're basically double the price of an equivalent combustion engine in the same price.
Okay? These guys need to get together with Russell Zimmerman from the Retailers Association.
Yeah, but it's the government. If you look in America, when they started to get large-scale adoption of electric cars, they were paying, you could get government incentives of up to $15,000. Everybody talks about how wonderful Norway is because electric cars are the best-selling cars in Norway. Well, the fact is they pay nothing for electricity in Norway for a start. Whereas gasoline is very, very expensive. They also have government incentives. The whole thing about this is, if you are trying to change the fabric of the social structure, which is that we should all be wonderfully and futuristic and green and drive electric cars, even though they run on brown coal, the only way you're going to change that attitude is by having some sort of government incentive. Now, I know the car industry in the past has shied away from this, but let's be honest. They used to spend billions of dollars propping up the local Australian manufacturing industry. If the Labor government thinks that we should have electric cars, then let's see them put their money where their mouth is.
So just so we know what you're talking about, you mean sort of like a first home buyers scheme where there's subsidy,
right? Paul, it doesn't actually need to be a grant. It can actually be some tax foregone. It could be import duty foregone. It could be GST foregone.
Heaven forbid, it could be luxury car tax.
Well, you know, how can you put luxury car tax on a vehicle that doesn't pollute?
Yes, exactly.
Anyway.
Well, simply because rich people drive them.
They will. Look, we have actually run out of time, Paul.
Yes. Sadly.
Anyway, our next guest is going to be much more interesting than you.
That's outrageous. Paul, could I just defend you and say that as someone who's not interested in cars, I've really enjoyed the conversation. It's been actually very interesting.
Yeah, good.
That's why he's successful.
Okay.
Thanks.
I do the best I can.
Thanks, Paul. And now we're into the new year. We're back onto our regular schedule. You have a nice weekend. And
I will indeed.
I'll see you soon.
Okay, Macca. All the best.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye.
Hi, this is John Borghetti, the CEO of Virgin Australia. Just like Joy 94.9, we are flying high and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.